Okay, good morning, guys. Come on in, come on in. Stuff. Okay, let's talk about some of the Rashis. Come on in, Simcha. Some of the Rashis regarding going to war and Mashiach Muhammad. So the Torah writes that part of the Kohen's message to the Jewish people is not to be afraid, not to let fear overwhelm them or handicap them. Fear can be very incapacitating, one of the most powerful emotions, and how to deal with fear and how to overcome fear. We talked about it a little bit earlier this week. So the Kohen tells them as follows, V'yamar Shema Yisrael, Al Yerach Levavchem, Al Tiru, Al Techbezu, V'al Tarzu. Don't be afraid. Four times. Different types of fear. Maybe I should be afraid. Maybe if you're cautioning me not to be afraid four times, maybe I should be afraid. It's different types of fear. Why does the Torah, why does the Kohen stipulate four different types of fear? So we would think, because there are different levels, not just quantitative, but different aspects of fear. There's dread, there's anxiety, there's fright, there's terror. Fear isn't just one general or vanilla emotion. There are different layers to fear. So I would have said that that's probably the literal reading, to look at these words and differentiate or discriminate. Move on in. So you don't have to stand at a distance. Move on in. To discriminate, come, go. Discriminate between different, you don't have to be afraid. Different types of fear. Rashi quotes the Gemara in the beginning, the Mishnah in the beginning of the seventh parak of Sota. I'll just read it from Rashi. Rashi says that the Kohen is informing them of different types of fear. So let me read Rashi. He's more or less paraphrasing the Mishnah. Al Yerach Levavchem. Let me find the Rashi here. Excuse me for a second. Okay. Al Yerach Levavchem, don't be afraid of the sound of horses. Mitzahal Asusim. Horses could be very loud. Al Tiru, don't be frightened. Mihagafas Trisim, clanging of shields and spears. That's another way the sound was made. Al Tech Bazu, don't be afraid of Kol HaKronos, the sounds of horns that were blown in war. The Al Tartsumi Kol HaTzvacha, people screaming. So there are four different ways in which sound was generated as part of ancient warfare to frighten or to psychologically demoralize the enemy. The horses, the spears and shields, the horns, the screaming. You've seen the movies, you've read the accounts. So why is the Kohen stipulating or enunciating each of these sounds? Why is it important? So there are two reasons. The nature of fear is, it's very, very vague and ambivalent, and your mind starts racing and playing tricks on itself. One of the ways to overcome fear is if you can understand, well, what's causing this fear? What's causing this phenomenon? It's not just some incoherent, general, ambiguous fear. But if I know that the sounds are not just a swirl of confusing, frightening noise, we live in a world of noise, but this is real noise in warfare, but no, that noise is coming from a spear. Spear's not so frightening. That noise is coming from a few horses. They're not as frightening. So if you're able to identify the source of a sound or some stimulant that causes you fear, you're better able to deal with that fear. More importantly, when we feel fear in life and stress, not just fear, it's very often a combination of many factors that are amalgaming, that are coalescing. When we feel stress in life, it's because a few things are affecting us and they're combining to create stress or fear or anxiety. And very often a lot of boys come to me and ask me for help with stress or fear, and I'm saying, what's really happening is that there are two or three things that are combining. They're separate issues. Deconstruct them and deal with them separately, and it cuts them down to size a little bit. And you're able to say, well, it's not as frightening, it's not as overwhelming as it seems. So you're in the middle of a battlefield, you hear this swirl of loud sound, you haven't slept in nights, you're starving, you haven't showered, you're losing your sense of routine and biorhythm. Wait a second, you know, it's different things happening. There are horses, we'll find a way to deal with the horses. There are spears and shields, find a way to deal with the spears and shields. They're screaming, we can scream also. So very often in life, when you feel stress, when you feel fear, when you feel these emotions, try to sit down, tag them, what is causing it, and try to deconstruct them and separate them. You'll find it's 50-60% at least percent of the solution, and then you can start facing them. Identification and deconstruction, or at least separation. That's what the Kohen is, a very important psychological factor. In the middle of battle, it's the horses, it's the spears, it's the screaming, it's the horns. Now we'll deal with each separately. That's one thing. How is this conveyed? What language does the Kohen speak? Shema Yisrael, one of the four times in the Torah the word Shema Yisrael appears. Shema Yisrael, Atem Krivim Hayom. So the Gemara on Daf Mem Beis in Sota derives that this has to be spoken in Lashon HaKodesh. Now, that's very interesting because there are some recitals in Halacha that have to be in Lashon HaKodesh. Some can be in any language that's best understood. It's actually a parak in Sota. The seventh parak is called Elu Ne'amarim B'chol Lashon. It starts in Lamed Beis. And one way to divide them is those texts that should be understood typically can be recited in whatever language you want because you want people to understand them. So if people aren't fully conversant, aren't fully familiar with Hebrew, you want them to understand other languages. For example, the Megillah, Megillah's Esther, can be read in all sorts of languages, depending on the focus. Those that are more formal, like Mikra Bikurim, have to be recited in Hebrew. Now, if you ask me, should this psychological counseling of all the soldiers going into battle take place in Hebrew or in whatever language they understand, should be whatever language they understand, so that they'll appreciate it, they'll absorb it. And yet, it has to be recited in Hebrew, Shema Yisrael, Atem Krivim Hayom. What's the reason? When a Jewish soldier enters into battle, he or she has to realize that they're fighting on behalf of something larger than themselves. It's not just the current geopolitical skirmish, or the current war, or the current encounter, but it's a history of Am Yisrael. And you're fighting on behalf of something so much larger than yourself. Now, Baruch Hashem, we can talk about this. For thousands of years, Jews lived in mortal fear of soldiers. Now, Baruch Hashem, you're in a yeshiva. Think about what you did this week. Think about the magnitude of this week. You're entering a yeshiva for the first time in 2,000 years from B'nai Torah, are defending our country and serving in a Jewish army with an Israeli flag on their lapel. So, understanding that verticality and that history, that you're part of something larger than yourself, can only be accomplished if you read it in Hebrew. If you read another language, substantively you may understand it better. But language is a very powerful cultural anchor. That's why it's so important to us that you learn to speak in Hebrew. Obviously, modern Hebrew is not exactly the same as classic Hebrew, but language is fluid. It's the language of our people. Language is not something which is ossified or fossilized. It's based on Tanakh, it's based on Mishnah, and then it changes as the dynamic and the trajectory of the Jewish people change. So language is a very, very deep cultural anchor, and I would hope that you all walk away from this yeshiva on this year knowing how to speak. Not more conversant, some less conversant Hebrew. That's part of your firmkeit. That's part of your identity as a Jew. So if we want to solidify and enhance that identity of a Jewish soldier, he has to hear it in Hebrew. He can't hear it in French or German or Roman or English or Russian. And the Gemara actually derives this from the word v'diber. The Kohen speaks. Where else does it say a language of v'diber? Moshe yidaber v'lokim yanenu v'kol. Just like in Har Sinai, the Torah was given in Hebrew. Similarly, when a person, you should feel when you go in a battle, you're standing at Har Sinai. People that know the Torah, v'diber, you feel like your mom is standing at Har Sinai and Moshe HaKadosh Baruch Hu is speaking to you. Now the Kohen, so what a schus it is to be here this week and to start your life and to encounter a world in which Har Sinai and battle, unfortunately, we hope you don't have to go to battle, are fused. And it's the very same pasuk describing Har Sinai, the same Gzeres HaKasuv describing, the same word v'diber describing a soldier entering battle. They're not different experiences. They're both Avodas Hashem. Finally, Rashi asks about the adjacency or the juxtaposition of the section of war to the immediately preceding section. The immediately preceding pasuk is that when Edim are caught as Edim Zomimim, and they've lied, and they've manipulated the system, you should punish them, Ayin B'Ayin, Nefesh B'Nefesh, Ayin B'Ayin. It's not just about Edim Zomim, but in general, the judicial system, social morality, an ethical society, rule of law, integrity of the judiciary system, which these Edim have compromised, then right away, Milchama. It's a strange juxtaposition. So Rashi asks about the juxtaposition, and he says as follows. He says, Lomer Lacha, second shot in Rashi, Imasisa Mishpat Tzedek, if you construct a just and an ethical society, a moral society, Ata Muftach, I promise you, Shintetze Lamin Chama Tanatzech, if you go to battle, you'll emerge victorious. Why is our ability to construct a moral society, a society of law, so important to our success on the battlefield? It seems unrelated. Well, the obvious answer is Siyat Lishmaya, Kodesh Baruch Hu's tit for tat. Kodesh Baruch Hu was promising us his intervention. Kodesh Baruch Hu set up the care of Machanacha. You do yours, I'll do mine. You construct a society of morality, rule of law, consequences, accountability, and I'll intervene in battle. But I think there's something a little bit more than that. whenever you fight for an idea, for a value, for something, like I said, larger than yourself, you fight with greater verve, with greater commitment. Think of the last major world conflagration, World War II. The Allies had a sense that they were fighting for freedom. They're defending freedom against fascism. They're defending freedom against evil. And people were willing to dedicate life and limb. What makes our army here in Eretz Yisrael? We're fighting for a value. Some people feel that it's the modern warfares. I'm thinking about, let's say, the West's confrontation with radical Islam or Islamic fundamentalism. Islamic fundamentalism is conducting a jihad based on an idea. Many people feel that the Western forces aren't necessarily sufficiently attuned to an idea. You can't defeat an idea with a bomb or a tank. You have to defeat an idea with an alternate, with a contrasting idea that's supported by military might. And until you have that alternate idea, you won't defeat the idea that you're opposing. So if we know that we're we're building a society, we're building a community of morality and of ethics, and that's our role in this world, to represent the Kodesh Baruch Hu's morality, then we enter the battlefield not just supernaturally and metaphysically the Kodesh Baruch Hu will intervene, but we stand for something. We're defending an idea, again, that's larger than myself, larger than my life, and I'd be willing to die for that idea because I know that the idea will live. And I have to. People aren't willing to go to the mat to support ideas and to sacrifice life and limb. Ideas won't survive. Look at the ideas that have, Baruch Hashem, been sustained in Judaism. It's because people are willing to die on Kiddush Hashem. People are willing to sacrifice their lives for the value of these ideas. So it's not just HaKadosh Baruch Hu's supernatural intervention. It's the fact that we stand for reconstructing and re-landscaping the land of Israel from a land of heathen savagery, of immorality, of cannibalism, of drinking blood, of just paganistic savagery and brutality, into a world that's just. And that's what we've introduced to this world, the world of morality, the world of Baruch Hashem. I'm holding here if you guys want to read it. If not, you can Google it. Does anyone know what Ruach Tzahal is? Ruach Tzahal is the IDF code of ethics, and every soldier reads it as they start serving the IDF. What are the moral responsibilities of a soldier, not just to his country, not just to his people, but to all lives that he will encounter, to try to protect those lives as best as possible and to respect the dignity of the human condition? Something called Erech Adam, the value of human life, Tohar Neshek, when do you use your gun, when do you not use your gun. These are ideas that and we're proud, some people, and sometimes the moral conduct of the IDF, I'm not questioning the fact that the entire world laughs at it, sadly, but that's part of anti-Semitism, but sometimes we sacrifice the lives and health of our soldiers to uphold. When in the early 2000s we entered Jenin, which was a hotbed of terrorist activity, how many streets in Afghanistan and Iraq and Syria have been carpet bombed by Allied bombs over the last 15 years? How often did George Bush, this is historically documented, order wide-scale bombing of terrorist nests? And our soldiers went room by room, building by building in Shechem to try to find the terrorists and as best as possible, try to spare civilian lives. Civilians who aren't exactly our biggest supporters, but they're not terrorists. They're not actively or indirectly involved in acts of hostility or violence. And some people are questioning, why should we? And our answer is because that's who we are as a people. We're not in this land unless we represent HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And part of representing HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Musar, Mahu Rachum, Hashem Zerachum, We're Rachum, We're Chanun. It's an incredible ability to create people, Yeshiva Bachur, more sensitive, kind, compassionate. You're also able to wage war on the battlefield. So when there's an idea that you represent, it's not just HaKadosh Baruch Hu will intervene, but you fight more. And it's also confidence. When you know, it's something called moral authority. That's why it's so important. When you fall into the world of chait, or into immorality, into slovenly behavior, reckless behavior, it takes something away from you. It takes away your confidence. You feel like your life is no longer in your control. You're no longer making proper decisions. You're no longer living with dignity and idealism. And when you know that you stand for something, it's not just that you're protecting something, but you yourself feel more confident. Remember, I'll just give you a mashal, which I remember this all the time. People sometimes ask me in college, you know, how much should I study and how much should I learn and how much? And I'm saying part of your ability to do well on a test is not just how many hours you've invested and how long you studied, but how you see yourself, the confidence you bring into the test. And if you're confident, that can compensate for many, many hours of study. If you know that you deserve to pass or to excel in this test, and part of that confidence that you stand for something larger than the test of the exam or the paper is not larger than you. Those will all fade. But what you're building is something long-lasting through your Torah, through your mitzvahs, through your avodas Hashem. So in some ways, you'll do better on the test if you spend an extra hour learning the base measure. Because you walk into that test, not overwhelmed by the test, but knowing that you'll take the test, you'll pass, you'll do your best, but there's something you're building that's so much larger and so much more durable than that test. If you create a just and social society, not just so you're defending an idea, but hopefully you're imbuing yourself and infusing yourself with confidence, which is absolutely crucial in the battlefield, not just in the test, but on the battlefield, to have that confidence if you stand for something. So those are three very interesting Rashis. Come from the Gemara in Sota. Number one, Hebrew versus other languages. Number two, the juxtaposition of constructing a social, just society or an ethical society and launching a war or engaging in war. And number three, don't worry, something fell. Don't worry. And number three, learning how to deal with fear. It's just noise. Have a great day, everyone. It's just noise. That was my cue. Shabbat Shalom.